You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
August the 5th, 2020, President Trump once again doing something that's upsetting the left. He's planning to maybe deliver his Republican National Convention speech direct from the White House. And the left is saying, hey, the Hatch Act. You can't use government property and employees for political activities. There are some exceptions, and the president and vice president are exempt. But many are already saying this is an overt campaign act using the White House and the Oval Office, and we will fight it. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, Joe Biden says he's not going to travel to the Democrat convention of Milwaukee to accept his party's presidential nomination. He's going to deliver his speech from his home state of Delaware, all the time citing concerns about coronavirus. China's foreign ministry is now accusing our military. China's military is accusing our military of terrifying the world with mysterious biological weapons experiments. And they're demanding that the U.S. take concerns of the international community seriously and cease the research. This is the same China where we saw the outbreak of coronavirus and had never seen it documented as it exists now anywhere prior to what was seen in Wuhan, China in 2019. And we also had the World Health Organization, one of their experts, now declaring, you know, we're not so sure it did originate in China. We'll spend some more time on that a little bit later. Well, Tropical Storm Isaias, of course, was a hurricane, then became a tropical storm and still caused a lot of damage up the East Coast. Blast of 147 mile per hour winds gusting at Mount Washington in New Hampshire. At least six killed, tornadoes spawned off, and heavy rains causing some flooding. And there's a reason for all this, in case you didn't know. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio knows exactly why that tropical storm existed. He said, what we're seeing now is what we've been seeing for years, global warming. Yep, there you go. We got it pinned down. It's a global warming once again. Dateline Beirut, the latest report, at least 100 dead, and many that are missing and probably never will be found because they were probably vaporized in that explosion that happened yesterday at the Beirut port. 4,000 plus injured. Some of them might also end up dying. That explosion sending a huge mushroom cloud into the sky, flattening much of the port. The general consensus is that it was an accidental triggering of some explosive material in the area. There's also, of course, questions about, in addition to being ammonium nitrate, could it have been a bomb? President Trump has indicated some of our generals think it was an attack, a bomb of some type. We do know this, in addition to the dead, the Beirut blast wiped out 85% of the grain silos in Lebanon's capital city. That's going to be a major crisis in food going forward. Dateline New York City, a gangster involved in three drive-by shootings, three of them, one, two, three, after being released without bail in May. He'd already been charged with another shooting, and then they ended up letting him go without bail, and suddenly he's involved in three drive-by shootings. I guess they expected he would go and be nice. And out of Chicago, report that a Chicago officer shot in the leg while responding to a domestic violence call. That's the fourth officer in Chicago struck by gunfire in the past week. this latest officer in serious condition. And Chicago Public Schools are sending word out that they will not have classes in public anymore this year. It will be all virtual schooling. And if you thought hockey was going to be fully immune from kneeling at the anthem, we saw the other day, over the weekend, Minnesota's Matt Dumba took a knee between the game between Edmonton and Chicago, kneeling during the national anthem for the U.S., standing during the national anthem for Canada. He later said, I wish I'd not done that. Well, Dateline Alberta, players from the Vegas Golden Knights and Dallas Stars, some of them kneeling in both national anthems.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Tom Wellington and his staff at Wellington Environmental have certainly been busy over the last several weeks, making sure businesses and hospitals and nursing homes are clear of COVID-19. As you begin to reopen, try to restart your business, I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. I'll give you a phone number in a moment. They can come in, assess the situation at a very reasonable cost, and make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And even after you're open, if something comes up and you're not sure, you want to contact Wellington Environmental. And not only for COVID-19, for any other threat, mold, any toxic situation. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. In business for 30 years, you know they're doing it right. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Very superstitious. Writings on the wall. Very superstitious. Letters about to fall.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
I think we have to recognize that we have a national emergency unlike anything in our history. And that national emergency is that we have a president of the United States who is demonstrably unfit, incompetent, not honest, not capable of dealing with this horrible situation. And we need a political and cultural protectorate in this country between now and Election Day from the president of the United States and his recklessness. People are dead because of his recklessness.
There you have it. Donald Trump, once again, responsible for any deaths related to COVID-19. Those are the words of Carl Bernstein, appearing on Chris Cuomo, CNN, NNN. And, of course, it's Bernstein and Woodward, Bob Woodward in the 70s, that broke the Watergate story for the Washington Post and leading to the resignation of President Richard Nixon. Oh, point of note here that you might not be aware of. You see Bernstein on CNN a lot, and in a lot of liberal outlets and so forth. Where's Woodward? Well, they basically have not only different personalities, but different philosophies. Woodward was considered a traditional Republican, raised in a traditional Republican household, and described as a very gentle person, not one to go out flailing around. That's not to take anything away from what the two of them did in uncovering Watergate and the stories they came up with. I still look at it as a great piece of journalism and investigative efforts on the behalf of two young reporters. So they should get credit for that. Bernstein continues to live upon the laurels of that time, and that's okay. Many people do. They do something tremendous once in their life, and that's enough to keep them in the forefront forever. I have no problem with that either. And he's entitled to his opinion. But, of course, when he goes on CNN, NNN, you're not getting a journalist anymore. You're getting a clear analytical political hack response. When he starts saying we have a national emergency because we have a president of the United States who is demonstrably unfit, incompetent, not honest, and people are dead because of his recklessness, well, that tells you exactly where he's going with his thought process. Should be no surprise. And, of course, when they appear on CNN, if they're not going to walk that line, they're not going to take that approach, they're not going to be invited back. And no, I cannot recall a time that Bob Woodward was on CNN and any time recent. Maybe in the beginning when it began as a true, quote, news organization, before it became a political weapon. So Bernstein again in this interview, which, by the way, when he says that people are dead because of Trump's recklessness, a good interviewer, which Cuomo is not, and of course he has reasons not to be on this point, someone who's really skilled in journalism and wants to be an outstanding journalist will ask a tough question. And when he hears Bernstein say people are dead because of Trump's recklessness, the interviewer should say, well, how would you clarify or how would you identify and explain what the New York governor did in sending elderly back into nursing homes, sending them basically to their deaths and jeopardizing others in the nursing home? Of course, Cuomo didn't ask that question. And you know why. Not just that he's not a journalist looking for the truth, but because his brother is the governor of New York. So he's never going to ask a question like that. He'll have his brother on with him from time to time, and he never gets around to that issue. They'll talk about growing up and doing stupid things, but never a critical issue like that. And he'll even allow his brother to go on and on and on about how Trump is ruining the country because he's not dealing with COVID, but he will not ask one question of his brother, the New York governor, and where did you fail? But Bernstein is also peddling a story in this interview with Cuomo that there are folks in the GOP that know, they absolutely know that in looking at Trump, he is not stable. That's his wording. Here he is.
The Republicans on Capitol Hill, as well as those who have left the White House, they know that he is not a stable individual. They have told dozens of people they believe the president of the United States is out of control, that he is not fit to be the president of the United States. We need to be protected from this president so that we can be protected from COVID.
Now, of course, when he says there are people in the White House and those who have left the White House, there's your key line right there. Those who have left the White House. Because he's not citing anybody, of course, as a source. It's just a blanket that some in the White House and those who have left are saying he's not stable. I don't doubt there are some folks saying that. I really don't. I am sure that there are folks that have been in the White House and are no longer there, or that came at odds with Trump, that are saying that. But again, it's always hiding behind anonymity, isn't it? And we're talking about not being stable, then how could you possibly justify Joe Biden at this point? Joe Biden is having, obviously, some cognitive issues, whether or not it's beginning of Alzheimer's or dementia. I mean, it's frightening to watch. You ever watch someone that is trying to tell a story and they stutter and they can't help it, and you don't want to mock them, you care for them, and you're just trying to, you're doing everything you can to kind of help them get to the next stage, to help them out. And I'm sure that some in the left look at Biden now and they're thinking, how are we going to do it if he's on that stage with Trump? So they've got to continue the attacks on Trump, and Bernstein is helping play that card. As he says, Republicans on Capitol Hill and in the White House and those who have left, they all say he's unstable. They know he's unstable. And again, this gets back to him being reckless. That's why we're all looking at a disaster with COVID, that we need to be protected from this president so we can be protected from COVID. And again, Cuomo, if he's being a very good journalistic reporter, would say, well, you know, Dr. Fauci just the other day said that when Trump ordered a stop of flights from China and from Europe, he saved thousands of lives. What's your response to that, Carl Bernstein? But no, he didn't ask that question. So Bernstein is on a rant now. He's just said that many in the GOP know that Trump is not stable. And then he goes back into what he saw happen during Watergate with Nixon. Now, this becomes a very interesting storyline. And again, Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, they documented what was going on at that point and did a great job. I'm going to give them credit for that. But now you got Bernstein going, hearkening back to Nixon and how Nixon got a response from his own party because as the events unfolded, they realized they could not continue to support him. So Carl Bernstein is saying all of these in the White House and the GOP that know that Trump is not stable and not capable, including even Senator Mitch McConnell, they need to step up and do what happened with Nixon. Listen, please.
Mitch McConnell understands that this president is not capable of being a fit president of the United States. And it is time, as happened in the Nixon presidency. What happened in the Nixon presidency? A group of Republicans led by the great conservative Barry Goldwater and by the minority leader of the House and by the Republican leadership marched to the White House and said to Richard Nixon, you are unfit to remain in office. You must leave the presidency. We will no longer support you. Something similar has got to happen in some kind of conscience rendering by Republicans to save us and to save lives in this country.
There you have it. That's his game plan for Republicans. They need to go into the Oval Office. Senator McConnell should lead them. Because according to Carl Bernstein, Mitch McConnell understands that this president is not capable of being a fit president. I would assume that Mitch McConnell would disagree with that statement. But Carl Bernstein apparently knows that Mitch McConnell knows that Trump is not fit to be president. So let's not let the facts interfere with his narrative. And he said, all you have to do, McConnell, is you and others, you need to go in there and do what they did in the Nixon presidency. As we saw, a group of Republicans led by the great conservative Barry Goldwater and the minority leader of the House and the Republican leadership marched to the White House and said to Nixon, you're unfit to remain in office. You must leave. We will no longer support you. And, of course, he was facing impeachment at that point anyway. So Carl Bernstein says that's what Republicans need to do now. So if they cannot defeat Trump at the polls, if they can't defeat him by crying out that he's not helping us save us from COVID, if they can't get rid of him by all the rioting and violence in the street, then give the weapon to Republicans and let them go in and take him out. At least that's the plan that Bernstein proposes. But also Bernstein then floats an idea. In this interview, he floats an idea that regardless of the outcome of the election, that even if Trump should lose, he already is looking at a way to hold on to power. Not talking about using the military. Not yet. That's not what Carl's proposing. But he is saying that he's heard talk in the White House that there is a plan. Just listen.
Because everything is about the base, as he calls it, and getting the base to somehow reelect him or get him close enough to reelection that he can then put into authoritarian practice, some kind of mechanism that will allow him to hold on to power, perhaps throw the election into the House of Representatives, which indeed is being talked about in the White House.
In the White House, they're talking about throwing the election into the House of Representatives. Carl Bernstein has all these sources. He says that's what they're doing in the White House. Well, they do know that the House of Representatives is controlled by Democrats right now, and I don't know after the election if Democrats are still going to control it or not. But the election's in November, and let's say the Republicans win the House. They won't really be in power until the inauguration, and they're sworn in. But Bernstein is saying there might be a plot to throw the election into the House of Representatives, and it will help keep Trump in place. If you believe the House of Representatives, whatever members exist at that point, whatever party, that they would vote to keep Trump in, how would that happen? Is there such a mechanism to go around the vote? There is something called the 12th Amendment. Not intended to go around, but to resolve an issue that cannot be settled by the Electoral College count. We'll take a break and I'll explain, and we'll look in more detail at the 12th Amendment. Yeah, I think you're going to find it fascinating because a lot of folks aren't even aware of it, and certainly as to how it fits into presidential elections. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison. And time keeps dragging on.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
The presidential election of 1800 revealed a need to amend the U.S. Constitution. See, at that time, the original system for electing presidents provided the candidate receiving a majority of the Electoral College votes would become president, and the runner-up would become vice president. They didn't have a ticket as you have now. So the top two vote runners would be either president or vice president. And the 1800 election did result in a tie between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr. So under the Constitution, the stalemate sent the election to the House of Representatives. And as you know, they chose Jefferson. Well, then later it was decided we need a 12th Amendment to the Constitution, requiring separate contests for the office of president and vice president, to balance the role of the House in breaking presidential ties. So the 12th Amendment requires the Senate to handle that responsibility for any deadlocked vice presidential contest. Senate used that power only once, the election of 1836, which made Martin Van Buren president. Kentucky's former Democrat Senator Richard M. Johnson fell one electoral vote short of a majority among four vice presidential candidates. And of course, you have right now a lot of folks on the left saying we should get rid of the Electoral College anyway, because they didn't like how it turned out the last time. Hillary winning popular vote, at least by the count, assuming they were all legal, which I don't automatically assume, that everyone voting was a U.S. citizen, had a right to cast a ballot, and that none were forged or dumped if they didn't go the way they wanted. All of that aside, she, quote, won the popular vote, but then the Electoral College vote numbers went to Donald Trump. Only two presidential elections, 1800 and 24, and 1824, have been decided in the House. And again, the 12th Amendment came in to make sure they didn't have ties as they did previously. In addition, by the way, to Hillary Clinton and the race with Donald Trump. There have been four other times that a candidate won the popular vote, then lost the election. Andrew Jackson in 1824, losing to John Quincy Adams. Samuel Tilden in 1876 to Rutherford B. Hayes. And Grover Cleveland in 1888 to Benjamin Harrison. Oh, let me see. What was that other one? Let me see. What was that? That was one that we spent weeks talking and learning a new word, Chad. Al Gore in 2000. George W. Bush. So you go back to what you heard that Bernstein was saying, that he's heard that it's being talked about in the House, a way to maybe for Trump to stay in power is to throw the election into the House of Representatives. It's pretty far-fetched, I would say. But it makes good narrative. What is really making good narrative for the left right now is how powerful the progressive left is becoming. And this is going to put a lot more pressure on Joe Biden and the standard Democrats. It's getting hot in here.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
I can feel my face when I'm with you. My love it. And I know she'll be the death of me. At least we'll both be numb. And she'll always get the best of me. The worst is yet to come. All the misery was necessary when we're deep in love. Yes, I know.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I'm just thinking. I don't think Nelly, a St. Louis rapper, will come after me for using getting hot in here. I didn't do it as well as he does. I know that. I haven't seen him around the poker tables lately. I don't even know if he's hanging around St. Louis right now. But if you see him, tell him, yeah, Larry butchered it. But it is getting hot in here for some of these Democrats because of what's happening. When I came to St. Louis, 1975, there was a guy by the name of William Lacy Clay, Sr., who was a congressman from the Missouri 1st District, a large section of St. Louis City, and going to the north and east a bit. He had been in office at that point for 6 years, elected first in 1969, and then he was reelected. And reelected, and reelected, and reelected, and reelected. In 2001, after 32 years in the House of Representatives, he stepped aside and his son won the House seat that he had held. So that had been in the family of the Clay family since 1969, and Clay Jr. had held for 10 years, 10 terms, I should say. He was challenged the last time around by a woman by the name of Cori Bush. She didn't have a lot of money. She didn't get all the attention she wanted. The squad type stuff, the new progressive stuff, was just beginning to get strength. Just as Democrats had backed her, they had also backed, of course, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others. But they couldn't pull it off, not in Clay's district. Yesterday, that changed. The primary vote, Bill Clay is out. The Clay family no longer has the first congressional district. Progressive challenger Cori Bush winning. She said after a win, they counted us out. They called me. I'm just a protester. I'm just an activist with no name, no title, no real money. But St. Louis showed up today. And the Justice Democrats were quick to point out that we had helped her previously. Now, she lost to Clay 2 years ago in double digits. So this time, she got a little more support because she also got the endorsement by then-presidential candidate Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. And the organization Justice Democrats tweeted out today, from the Bronx to St. Louis, the squad is here to stay and it's still growing. And with that in mind, you also saw in Michigan, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, one of the original members of the squad with AOC. She declared victory this morning in her primary election. Again, you've got her as one of the four members of the freshman squad. This time she beat out the Detroit City Council president in the primary and will return to Congress. And she said, I was considered the most vulnerable member of the squad. I think it's safe to say the squad is here to stay and it's only going to get bigger. And of course, she also had endorsed progressive policies, Medicare for all, the Green New Deal. And she said, voters are sending a clear message. They want those things now. They don't want to wait any longer. So Cori Bush, now replacing Congressman Bill Clay in Missouri's 1st Congressional District, will be joining the other squad members as they go to make history in the House, if, of course, they win the general election. Cori Bush will win because she'll really have no challenger any more than Clay did in the 1st Congressional District of Missouri. And probably the same for Tlaib. The pressure, though, is now dropping down on top of Biden. Various polls have shown that he's leading, maybe by large points, according to some of them, if you buy them, if you accept them. But a Real Clear Politics national polling average just last night, an average, showed Biden leading Trump by more than 7 points. That's a substantial number. But we're still 90 days out from the election. And in some states, some of the key swing states, Biden has a bigger lead. And in some of them, Trump seems to have the upper hand. But Biden's got to figure out, what do I do to make sure we hold on to the lead and we go forward? And those around him are worried about, how do we get Biden to that point? I saw one of the campaign ads, I think it was unveiled in New York City, showing Trump and Biden, and Trump is saying, if Biden knows how to make America better, why didn't he tell Obama? Well, of course, Biden is counting on that relationship and association with Obama as the vice president and his 30 years in the Senate. But Biden has had to take a hard, hard left turn. And now more progressives are taking control of the party with the wins, as I mentioned, of Cori Bush in Congressman Clay's district, Rashida Tlaib being reelected in her primary, probably right onto the general election, and of course AOC, Congresswoman Omar of Minnesota. All of them are pushing the Bernie Sanders doctrine and have forced Joe Biden to accept more and more. Kind of like eating an elephant. You got to do it a bite at a time, but they're going to make sure he eats it. And he better hold to it. Some have said, look, maybe he'll get in and then he'll just try to go a different direction or at least go back, swing more back to the center. It's not uncommon for a candidate, a politician, to say, I'm going to do one thing, and then once they're in there, they go different, not just by small degrees, but maybe a large swing. Republicans are saying, we've got Biden becoming more and more radical, and he has to be if he's going to get the vote and support of the progressive left. And, of course, Biden and Sanders had some problems and difficulties, but now, supposedly, Sanders is on board with Joe Biden. But a lot of the Bernie Sanders supporters are not. They still wanted Bernie, or at least Elizabeth Warren. I read you the quote the other day of one of the former Bernie Sanders key figures in the campaign, saying voting for Joe Biden is kind of like having to eat a bowl of fish doo-doo. You just have to eat half of it. But you still have to eat half of it, and it's just too much. Can't stomach it. And Joe Biden has not shown any great push for enthusiasm among his supporters. It's just not there. Even leading black voices have said there's just no enthusiasm. The radio host, Charlemagne Tha God, who Biden had said, if you don't know by now you should vote for me, then you're not black man. He's talking to a black man when he says it. Has stated that he doesn't have any enthusiasm for Biden. He's waiting to see who's going to be the VP, who's going to pick for VP. That might help. But Biden cannot pick someone that will not be acceptable to the far, far left. And all of the women candidates trying to get on that ticket, and you can bet it's going to be a woman. Then the question, will it be a woman of color? Susan Rice, Kamala Harris. But will they be far enough left? And some of them, in their previous stances, they have not been that far left either. The far left progressives that are sitting in the driver's seat right now and making decisions about how fast and how far we're going to go are going to continue to push their agenda. And if you don't get on board with it, then you will be left behind. Joe Biden has to balance this to the extent he can. How do I make roads and get support of the standard Democrats that have always been there for me, and at the same time get support from this far, far left? I'm not sure he's going to be able to do it effectively, not in the minds of the left. And that means this campaign is also doomed. You think? Maybe not. Some interesting news reference COVID-19. And in particular, I want to share a story about a six-year-old that came down with COVID-19. Or, I'm sorry, a second grader. I'll have that story when we continue. So please stand by. We've still got that story coming up.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm racing.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
There's no telling how much better we would be off in this country if we had known the truth in the beginning about coronavirus. But the World Health Organization, doing the bidding of China, kept it silent for a period of time, allowing it to rapidly spread. And they knew what they were doing. China knew what it was doing. But now, an expert, at least being called an expert, with the World Health Organization is now saying, you know, this coronavirus didn't really necessarily jump from animals into humans in Wuhan, China. In fact, they're suggesting that maybe it didn't even originate in China. Once again, trying to move the facts and the goalposts. We have accused Beijing of destroying coronavirus samples collected early, which have made it difficult to trace the origin. And they certainly were not giving us the truth, and the World Health Organization went along with it. So when I see an expert with the World Health Organization saying, we're not even sure it started in China, my antenna goes up. There's a report that's come out from the CDC statistics. As of this date, COVID-19 death rates in the U.S. list the top 15 states with the most deaths. 15 on that list is Indiana, with 45 deaths per 100,000. 45 per 100,000. You go up, and about not quite midway up, you find Illinois with 61 deaths per 100,000. You go farther up, you don't see Missouri at any point. You see Louisiana at 87, Rhode Island 95, Connecticut 124, Massachusetts 126, New York 168 per 100,000, and topping the list, 179 deaths per 100,000, New Jersey. Don't see California on here. Don't see Texas, not in the top 15. And, of course, we still have our economy closed down and trying to decide what can we do, especially when it comes to school. No one wants our kids jeopardized. But the general consensus had been that unless a child has some immune deficiency disorder or some kind of health problem, they probably are not going to be that susceptible for COVID, at least not to the extent it's going to be any more than a common flu or cold. So in Georgia, the Cherokee County School District was getting ready to start. This is in the Marietta City area. And a second grader, after attending the first day of school, tested positive for COVID-19. So then they shut the school down again for deep cleaning. The teacher and 20 other students quarantined for 2 weeks. We obviously have some things we're still trying to decide about this, and we don't want children to be on the front line as a guinea pig. But everything has been indicating that children will not be that susceptible. And simply having a positive test does not mean anything. The CDC had previously estimated at least 20 million have or have had coronavirus. 20 million. Now, we've only done testing that shows less than 3 million. Maybe 4.5 million are positive. And we've got sports and everything else in holding patterns. Baseball teams have one or two players testing positive, and they shut everything down. So they test positive. Does that mean they are actually going to suffer from it, or are they going to pass it on to someone? Or is it just better just lock everything down, just keep everything locked down? Maybe after the election we'll find a way to open it up. Could that be part of the plot, part of the plan? If 20 million Americans, according to the CDC, and I've seen numbers higher than that, 10% of our nation's population, 320 million, be 32 million. Maybe 350 million, if you're counting all illegals, 35 million. If we still have only 4 million testing positive, and we have found more positive because we're doing more testing, does that mean there's more risk, or it's just that it's there? Have you been tested? Did you have a little headache the other day? Maybe didn't feel well, a queasy at your stomach, didn't think anything of it? If you go and get tested, they may decide you have had or you have COVID, but you don't feel anything. And, of course, if you're really a threat to endanger someone else, and we should all know it, obviously. But we have clearly put our economy and everything on not only stop but reverse because of this. I go back to what I said in the beginning of this segment. If we'd had the facts we should have had from China and the World Health Organization had not lied for them, we might all be better off. I thank you for listening. I do appreciate it. Let your friends and neighbors and even your enemies know we're on the air. And because as we wrap up this program, we're already planning for the next one. We'll be here tomorrow for you. Same time. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.